radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 20th of March 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at radioalbion.com, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story ever told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, and the soon-to-be-released Churchill's Body Count, Mr. Producer Extraordinaire Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello to you, sir. How the devil are you?
Corona free, thank God.
Ha ha, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. I don't know anybody that's actually got it yet. Do you?
That's all.
It's just celebrities, isn't it? I think they're the only ones that can afford to take the tests. They're not bothering to test anyone else.
Yeah, 20,000 tests in a 60 million population, pretty good.
And America, they said they had some tests, but apparently they didn't work. So now they're just keeping quiet about it. We've got a lockdown apparently happening in London. We've got Italy that is locked down. We've got people that are freaking out. We've got nothing on the shelves. But of course, we're used to having our social lives online. We're used to having making our podcasts and our videos
living in bunkers.
Yeah, and living in bunkers, and you know, it really doesn't make that much difference. Me and you were just talking on before we went on air, Dennis, weren't we? It's not going to really make that much difference to our lifestyles.
I've been locked down since the greatest storm ever told.
Yeah, I think we're going to cope with it quite well. So how is the filmmaking coming along, Dennis? How's the new documentary going?
Well, believe it or not, I mean, I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't really go into any detail. I found a real dark side of Churchill on the internet. And no sooner had I said we're going to look more closer into it, it's all been taken down. So I don't know what if people are sussing what we're up to. I don't know, but we're really weird.
What sort of thing was it? I mean, the dark side of Churchill, as if you haven't documented a dark enough side to him.
No, it gets worse. I mean, there's a substantial, well, rumours, and I suppose substantial amount of some kind of evidence that his father was Jack the Ripper.
Really, I would question that. Jack the Ripper was apparently he was Jewish, but I don't think he was Churchill's father. Yeah, and a Freemason. There are signs to pointing that way. But they did claim that they had found him, didn't they? This year or last year, and he was of Jewish heritage. I think we got to be
another one. Yeah, I'm not saying these are true, but what I'm saying, this was a whistleblower who was, I believe, an elite and blew on Churchill. Another quick one was that his mother took the inheritance when his father died. Churchill never forgave her. And then in a roundabout way, got rid of her.
Right. And very, very strange stuff there. I think what you've really got to do is you've got to be careful, because I think sometimes people put out crazy information for people to latch onto and repeat, and then it discredits what they're talking about. It's sort of like Adam Green, who's fallen in with that Bjerknes, who you debated the other day.
Yeah, and it just my ambush buddies.
Yeah, well, it just discredits what Adam Green does. I think Adam Green's got integrity. He's obviously intelligent, but he's fallen for a total scam there, and it discredits the other work that he does. And you know, we can laugh, you know, and mock this Bjerknes, but the fact of the matter is, a lot of people do fall for these scams, and you do have people with credibility that tend to promote them. I mean, Henry Mackow, he does a lot of good work, but at the same time, he will also slip in this little bit of poison, and Hitler was a bad guy, and the Jews were all really gassed, alongside some really good anti-feminist stuff. And then you've got...
Well...
Go on.
I think it comes from the misunderstanding of National Socialism. I think this is one that, I mean, I know Alex Jones jumped on it once over, and he'd been coming in by the back door when they were claiming that, you know, we're no different to Marxism because it's, you know, most people associate the word socialism with communism. So in National Socialism, it's an easy way to get people, you know, deceived who are not really clued up on it all. And like, I think we'll find the same tonight.
Yeah, people just hear the word socialism and think it must mean Marxism, when socialism is really just nationalism. It's international socialism that is communism, and it doesn't work because you're taking from one group of people to give to another. But if you've got national socialism, how can you steal from your own family? You can't.
That's it.
It just means that you help out the members of your family. You don't look at them as not being necessary because they're a lower class. You look at them as being just as necessary as the other classes, and you have those blood ties there, which means that you don't mistreat them. But one of the others in this group of people that seem to like to put out this false information, sadly, is Michael Hoffman, who wasn't always like that. He wasn't always like that. He's always sort of been in the David Irving camp. Or maybe not even that far, because he's always sort of criticized Hitler, but he's never gone over the top like he has now, and he's repeating all the sort of stuff that Henry Mackow repeats, and the stuff from that book, The Pink Swastika, and loads of really ludicrous conspiracy accusations against Adolf Hitler. I mean, I've mentioned before about how he was calling... how he was saying that Hitler based everything on the protocols, and he really should have based it on Joseph Eisenmenger's book, The Traditions of the Jews, which just happens to be a book that Michael Hoffman publishes, which I really didn't want to believe. He was just saying that so he could sell more copies of his book. But now we've got Michael Hoffman calling feminist Nazis and saying that feminism is National Socialism, which... You know, I mean, that really doesn't make any sense at all. And I've got his most recent article here, and I thought maybe we could go through that. And it's a friend of yours, actually, that wrote to Michael Hoffman, Brian Rue. You've been on his show a few times, haven't you?
Yeah,
well, he wrote to Michael Hoffman, and he said, "Dear Michael Hoffman, why do you write neo-Nazi radical feminists and their enablers below? You know these are Jews and neo-communists. You know Hitler was opposed to abortion. Why do you undermine your credibility to those who have admired your work for so many years? Is there a motivation behind your reckless actions?" Brian Rue. And I think that sums up a lot of our feeling here, because Michael Hoffman wrote that book, They Were White and They Were Slaves. He documented Ernst Sandor's Holocaust trial. And now he's just writing all this stuff, trying to undermine Adolf Hitler and National Socialism. And he's sort of shown that he's got more loyalty to Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, because he went and spoke to them a while back, and his attitude after that was, you know, why should I bother with you white lot? You don't pay me as much respect as these blacks did. These wonderful Muslim blacks, they really set an example that we should all be following. And I thought, well, that's a bit of a weird attitude to take.
That is weird.
And then he was showing pictures of himself with black babies and things like that. He's trying to sort of distance himself from nationalists, I guess, distance himself from race realists. And in this particular instance, I think he's just telling outright lies. And I think we can show that as well. And being deceitful in what he's actually doing. Because if people are honestly misled, that's one thing. But if they know better and they're still... continuing to promote something they know is a lie, then there's obviously something more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, like I said early on, I think it was Jim Marsh along with Alex Jones were in conversation where they pushed, you know, the socialism of Nazi, you know, National Socialism of Nazi Germany, you know, socialism, you know, Marxism, it's the same thing. And obviously I went to turn on in that last episode of Communism by the Back Door.
Well, what we've got here, we've got Michael Hoffman's response to Brian Rue's accusations. He says, "Dear Mr. Rue, don't attempt to hoodwink me with your irresponsible neo-Nazi propaganda. You haven't done your homework. You don't have the documentation and you lose the debate. So straight away, he's insulting him. Brian Rue's written a very respectful letter there. Yeah. And straight away, you've got ad hominems here. He's calling him a neo-Nazi. And is it similar to the technique that was used against you, wasn't it?
I was just thinking that. Yeah, really.
Just insults and you lose the debate, but before even actually putting any evidence before the people to make their minds up. He says, according to you, radical feminism is an entirely Judaic and neo-communist enterprise. Neo-Nazism is not involved. Wrong. The incessant immunizing of non-Judaics against culpability for the evils which they have massively condoned, aided, and participated in is a serious flaw in the thought processes of the far right. So we break that down, and what he's saying is, by not blaming whites for things like feminism, that is a serious flaw in the far right. And we do blame whites here at Radio Albion. We do blame whites for allowing all of this to go on. It's not like we say that... you know, women and Jews have all the power. It's white men that have all the power, but we handed it over to Jews when we emancipated them. We handed it over to women when we allowed them to have feminism and vote and all the rest of it. So it's not like we don't blame our own people for this. And he says, Irish-American Margaret Sanger was a pioneer in the eugenics movement in the US, which is at the root of the Planned Parenthood abortion mentality and which presaged and complemented the crime of Nazi sterilization of inferior people. Okay, so that totally discredits all of feminism then, and the fact that 99% of the leaders in feminism are Jewish, and that it's a communist idea, and that's where it came from, just because there was one Irish-American that was involved in the eugenics movement, and the eugenics movement isn't feminism either. So what he's doing here is he's trying to deflect from the point that Brian Rue made and turn it into something else. He's trying to turn it into eugenics instead of being about feminism.
Which is ridiculous.
He says, the Nazi mentality is not limited to a time or a place. Wherever we discover a savage reduction of the humanity of any person, there we find a revival of Hitler's ideology, and abortion is the most heinous of all such savageries. Nazism is intrinsically marked by irreformable distinctions between humans and subhumans. I mean, this is really is the worst of the anti-Nazi propaganda that is going on here. A National Socialism.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to Bertness.
Yeah, well, National Socialism was about doing what was best for the Germans, and you could have had National Socialism for the Japanese, National Socialism for the Arabs. I mean, it's basically doing what's best for your people. It doesn't mean you think everybody else is a subhuman and that is a savage way to think. I mean, I think what he's referring to here is the fact that the National Socialists used the term Übermensch and Untermensch. And just the very fact that they use the term Übermensch and Untermensch means overman and underman. And it has to mean people of the same race, because it's same man at the end of it. So if he's saying that what they were doing is calling other races Untermensch, then that's not making them subhuman, is it? Because Übermensch or Untermensch is the same thing at the end. It's man, it's men. It's just saying some are over men and some are under men.
Yeah. Well, I can't get my head around is the fact that Adolf Hitler mentioned many times of the birth rate, which was law in Germany. And why would he support abortion when he's offering money to wives, newly married wives, to stop at home and be a proper housewife? And the more kids you have, then the loan that was given out originally would be wiped clean if you had four children. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, the loan was enough to purchase a house if you'd had four children, so you got a house out of it. And then the women that were big mothers that had lots of children, they were given awards.
Yeah.
They were encouraged to stay at home and work, and the housewife and the mother was elevated to a very high level and a very high level of respect among people. If somebody could say, well, I'm a housewife and I've got four children, then, you know, they were looked at very highly in society. you know, the same way that we would maybe look at someone that said that they were, I don't know, a doctor today, or
well, I think he said he thought of a woman who brought up a family of say four children, but really brought them up well, you know, and educated and correct. In his eyes, was far more of a higher person than say a solicitor, a woman solicitor.
When you look at people and the way that they turn out, so much of it is down to the way that they were brought up. Mm. And understanding that was central to the ideas behind National Socialism, was get moulding children from when they were very young so that they became very good people when they grew up.
Well, so, this is why the governments of today want to take the children away from the parents, in England anyway, can be possibly even early as three, to get them away and give them their education in school, but, you know, not the education me and you would give them, you know.
Well, also, abortion is something that was promoted in communism, and at the end of... Yeah. At the end of the Soviet Union, when the Iron Curtain fell, it was the Russians that had the lowest birth rate out of all the white countries. They had a terrible, terrible birth rate because they were encouraged to have abortions. I think they were encouraged to have abortions right at the time of the very, very short-lived communist Bavarian Republic and that really experiment.
When you think about it, you know, I mean, women were at the forefront of all the revolutions.
Expand on that a bit more, Dennis.
Well, what I'm saying, like, is where Hitler wouldn't, make women go on the front line in a war, or get them back home, you know, making munitions. The communists often had women right on the front lines, whether in revolution or in army uniform.
Well, they'd often use them in the propaganda, wouldn't they? And, you know, showing the woman holding her fist up and they were supportive of feminism right from the start. I think there's images of the French Revolution, isn't there, with women getting involved in that. And it was all about sexual license, as E. Michael Jones has shown. It was all about breaking down all the moral laws and lots of free sex. And that was
done. Taxing the nation double.
Well, the attraction for people was to go over there for the free sex. And the same with communism. When that started, the attraction there was to go over there for the free sex. And all the women were seen as the property of the state, and everybody could sleep with them. And that was just the way that it was with the Bolshevik Revolution. It was quite horrific, in actual fact, because these Bolsheviks would come in and they would just see all the women as their property. And they would just rape them all. And of course, then there would be unwanted pregnancies and they would be aborted. It's the complete opposite. It's the complete opposite of National Socialism.
Morals are totally.
Once the NKVD would move into an area, they would take over one of these posh buildings, these aristocratic buildings, and they would just order the women to be sent to them so that they could just rape them all. And that was a common thing that went on. There was even one of our British politicians, one of the Liberal, I think Nick Clegg's wife, maybe her grandfather was one of these people that was involved in it. Don't quote me on that, but one of them at any rate. So National Socialism
isn't the person it seems to be, is it?
No, it was the opposite of communism. Michael Hoffman continues, he says, with regards to the Nazi movement in Germany, are you aware of the existence of what the Nazis termed the Office for the Promotion of Population Policy and Racial Hygiene? On June 22, 1933, the Nazi Minister of the Interior introduced legislation for the forced sterilization of dehumanized persons. And what that basically was, if you look at the title of it, it's telling you the promotion of population policy and racial hygiene. It meant eugenics. It meant the encouragement of the healthiest children being born and doing all that they could to prevent unhealthy children from being born with mental defects and physical defects. And Michael Hoffman might say, well, that's not Christian. But Adolf Hitler would argue differently. He would say, well, yes, it is Christian, because man was created in the image of God. And if you end up with a child that's born with limbs missing, with only half its mental faculties there, that is not in the image of God. That is a mockery of the image of God. That child didn't give its permission to be born like that. If that child had had a choice, it would want to be born into a healthy, functioning body with a healthy, functioning mind, spirit, and the potential to live life to the full. And what they were doing was giving the rights to German children to be born into a fully functioning, healthy body where they would be able to live life to the full, basically. And they were trying to prevent children from being born that were not going to be able to live life to the full and were going to obviously have the desire to reproduce and just continue that misery. And not just the misery of these children that were born that had to be looked after for the rest of their lives, but what about the misery of the family that then had to look after them and devote all their time to spoon feeding someone that wasn't capable of looking after themselves? It's not so difficult when it's a young child, but when it's somebody, you know, 30 years old or 40 years old and they're, you know, they have to be spoon fed and they can't go to the toilet themselves and you know, they're aggressive. People like that, why would you want to have more and more people like that in your nation? I mean, just from an economic perspective, it's going to be draining the economy and they're not going to be of any benefit. You could say, well, at least they're alive, but are they really enjoying life like that? Sure, if they had a choice, they would not want to be like that. Are you there, Dennis?
Yes, I'm here, yeah. I just think it's a, you know, a short-term pain for a long-term solution, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and if they had been able to continue with this, then you wouldn't have seen people with genetic deformities. They would have eliminated
exactly
a lot of these problems. I mean, we still have problems with genetic diseases today, and it's horrible for a family when they give birth to somebody and you know the child can't hear, can't see properly, is going to need operations for all the rest of their life, and what they were trying to do was to prevent that.
I have some official material here about this.
Go on.
It says here, in Germany, if a person was thought to be in a condition where life was intolerable or vegetated, euthanasia was practiced under extremely strict conditions, not without a court ruling. Hitler's decree of October 1939, typed on his own personal stationery and backdated to September the 1st, enlarged the authority of certain physicians to be designated by name in such manner that persons who, according to human judgment, are incurable can, upon a most careful diagnosis of their condition of sickness, be accorded a mercy death. However, such was the propaganda against the Germans that after World War II, the word euthanasia became a dirty word and was only associated with the Nazis. But in fact, a few states in America, around about 1998, 2000, California was one, became a euthanasia state.
Well, that's euthanasia. That's another part of it. But what this was preventing those people being born anyway. Another side to it was they said, well, you know, these people are living very miserable lives. And if their parents are suffering and if their parents think this is the right thing to do, if the doctor thinks it's the right thing to do, and if the court decides it's the right thing to do, then we will offer them euthanasia. I mean, that's what that was. And
which is correct, isn't it? I mean, you wouldn't do it to a pet, would you?
No, it's all about trying to improve the lives of the German people and prevent. And this is, you know, rather than euthanizing people, what they were saying here is, well, let's prevent these people, these poor people that are going to just be suffering for the rest of their lives. Let's prevent them from being born. I mean, I can imagine the unborn children, you know, would have been cheering Hitler wherever he went, because it meant that they would be born into healthy, functioning bodies. Never again would they be born deformed and not able to think and not able to imagine and, you know, able to actually live life to the full. Never again would that be taken from them. And yet it's portrayed, especially here by Michael Hoffman, as oh, this was the forced sterilization of dehumanized persons. Well, as I said, man was created in the image of God. So if you've got somebody that looks like a mockery of man, that is a mockery of God. They were created in that way, in to look dehumanized. That's why it looks horrible to us to see people that have got limbs missing, and you know they've got tumors all over their face or whatever. You know, you just think, well, wouldn't it have been better if they could have been born into a healthy body?
Exactly.
He says, on July the 14th, 1933, the Nazis enacted a law which took effect January the 1st, 1934, for the purpose of preventing the future propagation of lives unworthy of life. And obviously, he probably thinks that that's a bad term, that. Among the categories of persons unworthy of life, subject to be sterilized, were chronic alcoholics, epileptics, manic depressives, and the mentally retarded. And remember, they're not talking about euthanizing people here. They're not talking about killing people. Not even talking about abortions. They're just talking about sterilizing these people so that they don't go on to pass that curse on to another generation of epilepsy, chronic alcoholism, manic depressives, and mentally retarded. Why would somebody want to be born mentally retarded, or born as an epileptic, or born as a chronic alcoholic with a propensity for alcoholism? It just doesn't make any sense, does it? Why would you wish that upon someone? So he obviously thinks this is a bad thing. He says, before you cheer the latter category, consider that Hitler's top aide, Martin Bormann, advised the hygiene courts that political behavior be considered in making a diagnosis of mental retardation. Implacable foes of the Nazis were thereby potentially subject to categorization as retarded and sterilization. By 1937, Nazi authorities had sterilized approximately 225,000 lives unworthy of life inside of Germany. So let's look at Martin Bormann. Well, Martin Bormann had no authority to tell judges how to interpret the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the law, mentally retarded. If he was saying political behavior should be considered, I mean, all behavior of somebody should be considered before working out whether they're mentally retarded or not. And what he's done here is he's cherry-picked that basically.
Yeah, which is often the case with Martin Bormann.
Yeah, and where he's putting it, like, these people, these were lives unworthy of life. They weren't killing people. They were just saying that these were lives unworthy of creating life, creating more life. We don't want mentally retarded to replicate themselves and have more mentally retarded children and create, you know, even more problems. We want people to have healthy children, healthy babies. I mean, who today would say, well, I would, I don't really want to have a healthy baby. I'd rather have a mentally retarded one or one with a genetic deformity. He says, it is beyond ridiculous to suggest that Hitler's Nazis were not involved in the dehumanization of people, the mentally and physically disabled Judaic and Slavic people. Dehumanization is the root and branch of abortion and the root and branch of Adolf Hitler's Weltanschauung. Do not pretend you are not cognizant of this fact. Well, he hasn't actually brought up any abortion so far. He's brought up sterilization of people. And what he's saying here about the dehumanization, I think what he means is if people have been sterilized, they've been dehumanized. But isn't that preventing them from dehumanizing people? I mean, if you're going to be preventing people from being born with mental retardation, physical deformities, that's the dehumanization, because those people are being born without fully what it means to be human.
Without
that ability. Also, when he points out Judaic and Slavic people, Jews and Slavs weren't part of the ethnic nation, were they? They weren't citizens. They were guests. They had their own countries that they could move to if they didn't like it. So why should they be making, you know, laws about
laws for non-Germans,
Jews and Slavs? They were making laws for the Germans. I mean, what I think this shows supremacism, really, of Michael Hoffman, that he thinks that, you know, one nation should be making laws for others and telling others how they should behave. which is, you know, what we're against. Yeah. It's a UN type of thinking, isn't it? It's the human rights sort of thinking. Yeah. Everybody has the human rights to come to America. It's very disingenuous of him to use these arguments, I think.
He human says, rights have been back from Holocaust deniers.
Yeah. He says, now let us turn specifically to the Nazi laws and directives on and practice of abortion. So all of that first half has got nothing to do with feminism. It's to do with sterilization. So it doesn't address Brian Rue's question. It just, you know, sort of uses different language to try and make out that what the National Socialists were doing was somehow they were responsible for the dehumanization of these potential children, rather than the parents responsible for it, for irresponsibly creating children that were less than had less than the full capabilities of a normal human being. He says that the Nazi legal machinery was intended to protect the Aryan race from being aborted. The law had no other intent, and certainly not, as you would seem to imply, to protect all human beings from dehumanization and the scourge of abortion. Well, yeah, of course, a law in a German country was specifically concerned with Germans and nobody else. I mean, why?
Exactly.
What is shocking about that? You know, what business is it of Germany to start interfering in Slavic countries and telling them whether they can have abortions or not? This banning of abortions.
This country today, they make laws for the Muslims over us.
Yeah, well, just think about this as well, what Michael Hoffman is complaining about. What he's complaining about is that the Germans didn't make laws to ban Jews from giving themselves abortions. I mean, the biggest promoters of abortions are Jews. They would have been complaining if the Germans had said Jews aren't allowed to have abortions. They would have been complaining about that. And I mean, Michael Hoffman himself has shown how they use the Talmud to justify abortion. The Jews do. They actually call the fetus a rodef, which means a pursuer. And they say that the fetus itself is a pursuer of the mother. It's trying to kill the mother. So the mother has a right to kill the baby. And it's Michael Hoffman himself who has explained that.
Set, not in the Talmud.
Sorry?
For abortion. Do they have a deadline for abortion in Talmud or not?
I don't know if they have a certain number of months.
That'd be interesting.
It's just the way that they justify it to themselves. And it's Michael Hoffman himself who has, you know, discovered that, researched that, and made that information available for us. And yet here he is arguing that it's not fair that the Germans didn't ban the Jews from having abortions and how that dehumanized the Jews to not ban them from it. When it's their business if they want to do that, the same as it's the Slavics' business if they want to do that. All Hitler was concerned with was doing what was best by the Germans, the people that had voted for him. The citizens of his nation, anybody else there was a guest. And you know, it's not really up to Hitler to start, you know, interfering in their culture and the way that they live. He was interested in promoting the racial hygiene of the German people. I mean, it wouldn't be in his best interest to start promoting the racial hygiene of Jews or Slavs. They need to be doing that for themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, get all the rest in order.
The Slavs should have been promoting, you know, the racial hygiene for the Slavs. It's not up to somebody else to do that. See, this mentality is this same mentality that we've got today, isn't it? Of, you know, it's up to us to look after all these refugees. No, it's not up to us. It's up to their people to look after them. The same as it's up to the individual to provide a roof over his head and provide for his own family, because nobody else is going to do it. You have to do it for yourself. And it's the same with a nation. And yet Michael Hoffman thinks, oh no, you should be doing it all for everybody else as well, so they don't have to do it for themselves. He says, now let us turn...
Very communist type of thinking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is, isn't it? It's internationalist. He says, for example, on September the 8th, 1933, the Nazi Berlin Council of Physicians stated that proceedings will be taken against every evildoer who dares to injure our sacred, healthy race. And obviously what he's referring to there is miscegenation and genetically modified children. And that is a huge evil to do that to a child who doesn't have any say in it.
Just slightly off that beaten track, then he put some National Socialist paedophiles to death.
Hitler?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they were very strict on paedophiles.
Right.
And executing them. But again, what this comes down to is the rights of the child, doesn't it? The right of the child to have ancestors, to have a heritage.
Whereas the kids in Rotherham and Telford didn't have that protection, this is what he's giving them.
Well, the kids that were the result of the rape, of the Muslims raping the white girls and the children that they had, well, that would have all been prevented. But what this is saying here is that, anybody that tries to do that, to take away that child's right to having ancestors, to having parents that look like them, they will be punished for that.
Right, so.
Because the other problem is once you have, like mixed race people in amongst your nation, obviously they want to breed. And most of the time they want to breed with white people because they think that it will slowly put right the wrong that's been done against them. And slowly the offspring over the generations will get closer to looking white again. It's something like 80% of them try to get themselves a white partner. If you look into the statistics.
I remember, in the greatest one ever told, when Muhammad Ali was going on with, I forgot what he called it, like, oh, Parkinson. We were saying, like, you don't Muhammad want your Ali. Kids with dark skin and curly hair. But, but he looks at that as that's what he wants for his children. And Parkinson obviously just went off on another left-wing viewpoint. But, even Muhammad Ali wants to keep his race to himself.
And, I'm impressed with this, that the language that they used here, every evil doer, who dares to injure our sacred, healthy race. And every nation should be like that, because it's an incredibly wicked thing to do, to mix the races up. And it doesn't just last for one generation, does it? It's generation after generation. Yeah. It's not just one child that's going to be like that. It's going to be, potentially dozens of children that are going to have mixed up ways of thinking about things. They're gonna have two masters.
They're wanted by the coloured side, they're wanted by the white side, the kind of in between with no foundation.
And they end up resenting them as well, resenting the parents because of what they've done. You've got the neurosis there. Well, these are my parents. They love me. Yeah, look what they did to me. And it's a horrible thing.
Yeah, it's not. Psychology, we're saying, if you don't interbreed, it will bring out loss to fortune to interbreed. This is the ideal candidate for the National Socialists to show an example.
Well, look at the way people complain about genetically modified organisms. Mm. And that's animals or plants. And yet what you've got here is genetically modified humans. So they were trying to prevent there being genetically modified humans is what they were trying to do. So Michael Hoffman says there were no proceedings legislated to protect Jews, Slavs, or the mentally or physically disabled from being aborted. How could there be when the disabled and retarded were to be sterilized? Well, again, why should they be making laws for Jews and Slavs? They were making laws for Germans.
They had other times, they make laws for animals rather than another, people not from their country. They would, stop the cruelty. Because in Germany, the Germans weren't cruel to animals. They're not interested in what the Jews and the Slavs were doing.
And the point was to try and sterilise these people that were disabled and retarded to prevent them from producing children anyway. Unfortunately, if they did get pregnant, then there was the option there to abort the child. I mean, how could somebody disabled and retarded actually care for a child? They're going to have difficulties doing that. If they're a child themselves, they're going to have real difficulties bringing up offspring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sensible. The point is that if you were a healthy German, then you weren't allowed to have an abortion. That was the point. And when you look at today, I mean, the way that our systems are today, it encourages the least capable to produce the most and the most capable to produce the least. The most capable end up having one or two children later on in life, and the least capable end up getting pregnant at 13, 14 and having lots of kids and just being on welfare all their lives. And if you do get married and you have a child, then, you know, you don't get the tax breaks. If you stay together and you're not working, you get half the amount of money that you would get as if you were split up. I mean, couples today that have children, if they're on welfare, they get more money for being split up than for staying together. So there's no encouraging.
How weird is that?
Yeah, there's no encouraging to do the right thing. And I think also when he's saying Jews, Slavs, or the mentally or physically disabled, I think what he really means is Jews and Gypsies, because there weren't that many Slavs in Germany. It was Gypsies that they had, you know, that had different laws regarding them. They weren't allowed to marry Germans. The Gypsies weren't. He says, paragraphs 219 and 220 of the Nazi Penal Code, promulgated May 26, 1933, appear to refer to a universal ban on abortions in general. It is entirely deceptive. We know from the minutes of the meeting of the aforementioned Berlin Council of Physicians that a loophole was created whereby Nazi medical specialists appointed in each municipal district of Berlin were to review every case in which an attending physician deemed an abortion necessary. Well, that's a good thing. That is a second opinion, isn't it?
Mm.
That's a second opinion to make sure that it was actually necessary. To say that, you know, the National Socialists were really feminists and they supported abortion because they, when they were actually against abortion and they made laws, a universal ban on abortion for all Germans, is the complete opposite. Michael Hoffman's argument is because they didn't make a ban on Jews and Gypsies having abortions, then they were supportive of feminism. It's dishonest, well, isn't it?
It's crazy. I mean, feminists, I mean, I know a lady who should have retired this year, I think it should have been, at 60 years old, but because of feminism, brought it equal with the guys, and now she won't get a pension until she's 67. Well done, feminism.
Well, that is, that is quite a funny thing, isn't it? All their calls for equality, and now, yes, their pension age is the same as men's, and it serves them right, really. He continues, he said, if you had some knowledge of this history, you would know that Nazi permission for abortions for eugenic indications, the euphemism for abortion of Judaic and Slavic infants, among others. Well, hang on a minute, Mr. Hoffman. If this is for eugenic indications, then that can only be talking about the Germans, the German race. So what that is talking about there is a German who has got pregnant by a gypsy. That could be the only abortion for eugenic indications. If it was a gypsy that had got a gypsy pregnant, they wouldn't have been interested. That wasn't, because that wouldn't have been eugenics, would it? Helping out the gypsy race isn't eugenics. Helping out the German race is eugenics for the Germans. Again, it would be dysgenic for the Germans to be trying to do these things for other races. They need to work out what's positive for themselves and do these things for themselves. And he says that the permission for abortions for eugenic indications varied from one hereditary health court to another. And certain hereditary health courts held that such abortions were exempt from punishment. So yeah, there again, you've got decentralized administrations, haven't you? You've got the courts, and the court makes its decision. So again, what that is saying is that these courts weren't all just doing what they were told from a central position. They were actually making decisions on each case and taking each case as it occurred, rather than just giving out, mandatory judgments. It says, furthermore, following a Nazi legal ruling dating July 18th, 1935, the dehumanization represented by sterilization was permitted to be combined with the dehumanization of abortion, sterilization and abortion could henceforth be performed concurrently. And this is obviously for the purposes of racial hygiene, but this gives us an idea of what he means by dehumanization. He means to not have children means to dehumanize somebody. Whereas the very fact of the of people mentally retarded actually having children, they themselves are dehumanizing the children because they can't possibly live up to the full potential of a human being. You know, it's back to front what he is saying here. He says dehumanized Judaic people were not protected by or included in the Nazi laws contra abortion. Well, neither were Chinamen, Congolese, or Eskimos.
No.
You know, this is a nationalist state that makes laws for the benefit of the nation, not for the benefit of other nations, whether they live there or not. It says their dehumanization had been legislated into German law by the Reichstag, passed unanimously on September 15th, 1935, the Law for the Protection of German Blood and Honor, the so-called Nuremberg Law. It banned marriages between German Judaics and German Gentiles. Judaic Jews were officially deemed unfit for marriage with non-Judaic Germans. So he says there that is dehumanization being legislated into German law. And this is where I say that he's being dishonest, because surely he knows that is exactly the same law as the Catholic law banning marriage between Jews and Christians, which basically meant Jews and Europeans when it was made, which is in about the 4th or the 5th century. And that continued for well over 1,000 years. I think Hitler writes about it, and it continued right the way up to the 16th or the 17th century, the Catholic law.
Yeah, it kept the Christians safe from the Jews because it didn't allow women of a certain age to go working as a housekeeper for a Jew.
Yeah, the intermarriage between Jews and Christians was banned, and it was banned by the church, and it was banned by the Catholic Church. And Michael Hoffman claims to be a Catholic, and yet he seems to be having a little bit of memory loss here, because he doesn't seem to be mentioning that this was actually a Christian law. And if it was a church law, then, you know, that can't be dehumanization being legislated into German law. That what that is the reviving of ancient Christian law. Catholic law. So that's what I say. I think he's been deliberately deceitful there. Don't you think, Dennis?
I do, yeah. I mean, like it's to protect, because we all know, you know, what the Jews get up to. They've been kicked out of other countries for not just for money lending. They have all certain ways and means of gaining the finances, taking the media. And, you know, these pushing of feminism and everything else. So it's to protect that. Well, in Hitler's case, it would have been at that moment in time, it would have been Germany. But I'm quite sure it would have spread to all Europe had he won the war.
Well, he was just reviving ancient Christian laws that against the Jews that the church had stopped doing.
Yeah, that's right.
That was all that he was doing.
Yeah.
He says, in line with this officially legislated loss of fully human status, it doesn't mean you're fully human if you can have children. There are plenty of people that don't actually have children that still consider themselves to be fully human. You know, far more, I would say, somebody who doesn't have children that is fully compos mentis is actually more human than somebody with the mental age of a 5-year-old and more chromosomes than they should actually have. I mean, you couldn't hold them up and say, look, this is a perfect example of a human being. You would say that's a defective example of a human being. Right. And maybe that's harsh language to use. But it's
well,
not...
in nature, you know, animals, those delete the defective ones, won't they? As it once said, nature was cruel.
Yeah, if we look at animals, and if an animal will have an offspring that is defective, a lot of the time they will terminate that offspring's life because they know that if it lives, that will introduce that weakness and that defectiveness into the genome. And they know that instinctively. They know that offspring has to be terminated to prevent that from happening again, to prevent them, instead of there just being that one offspring that has these defectives, to prevent there being an entire family. A
series of them,
A series of defective offspring.
Yeah.
He says, abortions among Judaic women in Nazi Germany were allowed under the rubric of a racial indication, consistent with National Socialist anti-Judaic ideology. By March 1939, 6 months before Hitler was to invade Poland, a Nazi policy directive noted that restrictions on abortion do not apply to Jews. Now, I would suggest this is probably fairly similar to China. China has a law, or it used to have a law, where everybody could only have one child.
That's right.
Do you think that applied to Americans that were living in China, or British that were living in China?
Exactly.
Ridiculous, isn't it, his argument here? And again, as I pointed out, I mean, the idea of Jews complaining that they were allowed to do abortions is laughable, isn't it? Because that's what they've advocated for in every country that they've been.
In every single country, they'd be allowed to do that.
Repeatedly, in Nazi law and jurisprudence, we see that the intent of Nazi anti-abortion law was for one purpose alone, outlawing that which impairs the vitality of the German folk. The law promulgated March 9th, 1943, subparagraph 5 to paragraph 218. And again, he thinks that's a bad thing. Why is that a bad thing? That doesn't refute Brian Rue saying that the National Socialists were against abortion. That proves what he says is correct. They were against abortion for their own people. They weren't interested in what other people did.
I mean, look at Sparta. You know, they were sort of a similar thing when they had the young kids, you know, or the weakling babies. You know, in Sparta, if you didn't make a warrior, then you were left just like, you know, in the Animal Kingdom, you were left behind.
Yeah, left to be exposed. It wasn't just Sparta. And again, that was because, you know, they would, otherwise it would be introducing weakness into your people. And if your people became weak, they would be subjugated by another people. You had to keep your people as healthy as possible. I mean, we used to have quite a high early death rate, didn't we? A lot of children didn't used to survive, but it meant that the ones that did survive were always the fittest and the healthiest and the best examples and able to look after themselves. Because don't forget also, you've got the issues of when you have these people that are born like that, all the rest of society has to look after them. Instead of progressing and doing other things that they could be doing of benefit for them. I mean, you know, this is a way that a devil or someone that really wished to harm a nation could harm them, is cause them to have lots and lots of defective children. So all their resources are spent on just looking after those children and never spent on actually progressing or improving or making life better for themselves. Yeah, I think it's quite clear, believing in a force of good and a force of evil that I do, that it's the force of evil that tries to encourage as many defective births like this as possible. And it's a force of good to try and prevent it. And obviously the best way to prevent it is by not having these people born in the first place. The second way to do that is through sterilization. Obviously the worst way to do it is through abortion. But if you sterilized these people, you would only have one generation, and that was it.
That's from then on, the short term fix, isn't it? Yeah.
From then on, everybody would be born physically fit.
And of course, you looked at the German youth ones, Hitler. They were not fitter youth.
It says Nazi law contra abortion was never intended to apply to or protect unborn Jewish, Polish, or Slavic babies from abortion. Russian and Polish women were often persuaded to request an abortion. Well, Russia and Poland can make their own laws up in their own countries. It's none of Germany's business to improve the Polish race or improve the Jewish race. That's up to them.
It's up to the Poles, man.
And again, that doesn't disprove Brian Rue's point, does it? That they're against abortion.
No, not at all.
And it doesn't back up Michael Hoffman's point that the National Socialists were feminists. I mean, what you could say is the National Socialists encouraged feminism in their enemies. If that's going to be Michael Hoffman's point, because they didn't stop Jews or Poles or Russians from having abortions, they're feminists. Well, that's encouraging feminism among their enemies, isn't it? That's hardly saying that the National Socialists are feminists themselves. It's saying they understand that it's a weakness.
I think if National Socialist Germany had lived for 1,000 years, we would never have seen a man marry a man.
Certainly not. By directive of March the 6th, 1941, Polish farm workers, male and female, were prohibited from sexual relations with Germans under penalty of death. Furthermore, women toiling in Nazi labour camps were permitted abortions. CF, the secret circular from the Reich Health Ministry of April 5th, 1943, allowing female Osterbeiterinnen to procure abortions on demand. Well, that proves there's no gas chambers, doesn't it? If they're encouraging abortions in the labour camps, then they don't have gas chambers there.
Yeah, and well, the gas chambers, exactly.
And again, what you've got there is you've got ostensibly the enemy. And they're allowing the enemy to have abortions if they want.
If they want to harm themselves and carry on,
yeah. Claiming that Hitler banned abortion is just the kind of precipitate generalisation that gullible right-wingers have imbibed. Wow, Hitler was opposed to abortion. He couldn't have been so bad after all. Well, no, hang on a minute. It's Michael Hoffman that is generalising here. He's saying because Hitler didn't ban it for all his enemies, as well as for the Germans, then he wasn't against abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, I really did think Michael Hoffman was better than this. I really did think he was better than this.
Well, it makes you wonder why. You know, there's one or two change their opinion, don't they? I don't know. They do what they do, but...
Yeah, but his arguments aren't... You know, his arguments are dishonest, aren't they?
I mean...
He's using the sort of arguments that he accuses his enemy of having, and he's got a selective memory about the things that he's criticising about, especially, you know, those Nuremberg laws. Because he knows that. He's a Catholic. He knows damn well that it was the church that banned marriage between Christians and Jews. And yet he's got no criticism for that. And he'll bring that up and say, oh, this was the Nazi dehumanization process.
Yeah, well, we know the link between, the Christian religion and the Nazis, which, you know, they do try to hide, as we found out.
He says, if there is any mental incapacity nowadays, it is among those Nazi sympathisers who continue to believe only what they want to believe and then become infuriated at those who pursue the path of revisionist history that demolishes their mythical notions with facts from the documentary record. My readers and supporters depend upon me to attempt to the best of my ability to furnish them with the truth, and by the grace of God, I will continue that endeavour without fear or favour. Yet he's being dishonest here, and he knows he is. And his documentary facts here do not refute anything that Brian Rouge said at the beginning. Let's remind ourselves of what Brian Rouge said. He said, why do you write neo-Nazi radical feminists and their enablers below? You know these are Jews and neo-communists. You know Hitler was opposed to abortion. Why do you undermine your credibility to those who have admired your work for so many years? Is there a motivation behind your reckless actions? I mean, you could say that Brian Rouge could have expanded on that and put, you know, Hitler was opposed to abortion for his own people.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't expect him to care about other people doing that. And you would certainly expect him to encourage that among people that he was in a war with. Or people who are perceived as racial competitors. I mean, we're all competitors for limited territory, aren't we? You can look at the other nations as your racial competitors for territory. And, you know, the more abortions they have, the better it is for you, isn't it?
The more room.
Essentially. Yeah. I mean, that may not be a very nice thing to say, but that's the facts of the matter. So,
but I look at it this way, you know, Donald Trump has a lot to, you know, prove to me, and has proved just what he is. But if he can stop the abortion, if he can get rid of them judges and stop that rate of abortion in America, then at least something comes good from him.
Well, I really hope he does. But again, that will be Donald Trump stopping abortions for Americans.
Yeah.
not for Chinese.
I wish for anybody else now.
You know, he won't be interested in doing that for the Chinese or the Koreans, and it's not his business to. It's just his business to do it for Americans.
Yeah.
Well, we've reached the end of the podcast here now, Dennis. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Do remember that we do require your donations to keep the website going, and it's actually a brilliant time to be buying Bitcoin right now because it is very cheap, and we have a Bitcoin wallet at the bottom of every page. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you, and of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
RadioAlbion.com